It is your money. If you have a financial question for today's speakers, you can call this number anytime, 24-7, 365, 366 on leap year, of course, 1-888-6-ADVICE. You can email your questions also to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. You can also call or text our studio line here at WCCO Radio, 651-461-9226. Now, without further ado, here's the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, Bruce Helmer, and senior vice president and financial advisor, Peg Webb. Good morning, you two.
Good morning, Josh. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg Webb. Hello. Thank you for that introduction, Josh Wheeler. And listeners, this is a day, and Peg and I do this about once a month or so, where we just have an open line show and ask Peg and Bruce anything. So any and all financial questions today, you can call in, you can text, anything you can think of, anything that's on your mind. There's no limits, anything as it pertains, at least I guess the limits are, let's keep them the personal financial questions. Peg, I'll start by asking you, is there anything or a couple of things that you're hearing out there prevalently that you think people are focused on, clients are asking you about, things that are coming up from friends on the golf course? Is there some common theme or two that you think we ought to talk about a little bit?
Yes, I do. I think I kind of hesitated maybe last week or the week before that, well, I'm not getting that many questions about it. But this particular past week, I have got so many questions about the markets. And I think this week's a little bit more volatile than the weeks before. And so the question has always been, I think I want to take all my money out and just sit on the sidelines just for a little bit, and then I'll get back in. Well, I have all week been talking to people about the 2008, 2009, when the market really crashed. And that was a super scary time. And at that point, too, and it's nowhere near an event like that now. So people are just starting to have this anxiety about, well, wouldn't it be easy for me to just get out now and then I'll get in, Peg. Don't worry about it. I'll get back in. The problem with that is it is so easy to get out. You just make a phone call to your advisor or you go online and you pull everything and you say, put it to cash or money market. The negative is you will not, and I will say 99% of the time, you will not find that particular time when you feel confident to go back in. It just doesn't happen. It's kind of like it sneaks up on you. Oh, there's a good headline. Oh, there's a good headline. And by the time you know that it's time to get back in, it has just gone up. So an example would be, you know, people are fearing that they may lose double digits now. And if you go into a secure money market or the bank, and let's say you can't figure out how to get back in, it is a lot of times 20 plus returns that you will miss out on and never, ever, ever recover. So the better idea is, and this is what I've been coaching people on, is make sure that you're comfortable with the percentage of growth that you have. That's your first and foremost. It's not, oh no, now I've got butterflies and I've got a lot of anxiety about leaving the stock market or staying in. You need to just talk to yourself or your advisor and say, am I in the right mix? Stocks, bonds, maybe real estate and cash. Get that confidence back that no matter what's happening up or down, you're confident about that allocation. Bruce?
Peg, that was so good. You know, normally when we have a topic and we both, you know, throw some ideas out, you'll cover it really, really, really well, but I'll think of one or two other points to add. That was so good. I'm not even sure what to add other than I'm getting the same kind of things. In fact, I have had several clients in the last couple of weeks where we have reduced their equity exposure. But again, the big picture for those clients. Now, some of them have said, I want to get out completely. And I've said, are you sure you want to get out completely? We can reduce your exposure, but let's keep a little bit in there. I don't think we want to put everything in fixed income. And I've explained why I feel that way. And they've kind of agreed. But also, these are situations where their circumstances are such that they've reached an age or a time horizon, or they have a lot of embedded gains that they could take off the table, that there was some logic into reducing that equity exposure other than just current fear of the current situation. I don't think the current situation, really good, really bad, is ever a good reason to invest if you shouldn't be investing in the market anyway based on your other circumstances, or is a good reason to get out if you should be investing into the market for the long term. And again, we talk about this a lot, but obviously we can't talk about it too often because people still ask. Even though we don't know what will happen in the short term, and the market is off to a bad start so far this year, we're underwater year to date, we have negative returns. I always tell people, I don't know what the markets will do in the short term. If you ask me where it will be 6 months from now or a year from now, I truly don't know. I can tell you what I think, but I don't know. But if you ask me where it will be 10 years from now, I am extremely confident it'll be much higher than it is today. So if you're a long-term investor, and even if you're 65 and retired, I would argue that you're a long-term investor because you're investing for a lifetime and you might live easily another 30 years, I would say your long-term money still needs to be exposed to stocks. But yes, I understand the trepidation out there. I feel some of that same trepidation between, you know, all the dramatic changes that the administration is doing in terms of cutting government employees and the tariffs. So I understand the concern. But again, you have to look at your individual situation and say, you know, what is an appropriate exposure to stocks for me? And if you're not sure, you know, get together with your advisor if you have one. And it's a good time just to review everything, Peg, probably from a planning standpoint.
Yeah, the one other thing I want to add is what's unique about this time is how high of a yield we can still get on our safe money. So that's got people, you know, lured towards, well, if I can get 4% on my money in a money market or maybe a little bit higher, then why wouldn't I do that? Well, the problem is with a money market, you're not locking in anything. You're just getting the current rate at this time. And even when you look at CD rates, they're still favorable, but they're starting to go down as far as a longer term hold. So we don't recommend all of a sudden just saying, hey, I want to take all my money out of the stock market and go buy these high rates today, because I do not believe that they will be available, you know, longer down the road. And if you are trying to get out of the stock market, obviously that must be your longer term money. And so you may want to just stay, work the plan. And I like what you said, Bruce, in that if it is, if you're off on your balancing, and if there's maybe a big ticket item or something that you were planning on buying, yes, now's the time to consider taking that money and getting it in a safe place, because to me, that's short-term money. It's a goal you have. It's an aspiration that you have that you want to spend money. So I'm absolutely fine with that, but not on your long-term money. What do I mean by that? 5 or more years, Bruce?
Yeah, and to that point, and I like that you brought up the fact that safe money is still getting a pretty competitive return. I always look at what is the inflation rate and can I make more of my safe money than what the inflation rate is so that I'm not losing purchasing power. So I have a lot of clients that have shifted, you know, to some of their money to safe money, and I'm fine with that. If inflation's 3 and they earn 4, they're exceeding, you know, the inflation rate. They're not losing purchasing power. But I tell them, if interest rates go down further and or inflation goes up, let's say inflation is 5 and you can only make 3, well, then you might have to look maybe at reconverting some of these assets back into stocks because I don't want too much money, even though there's no risk of principal, that risk of losing purchasing power because we're not keeping pace with inflation. So I agree with you, Peg. There's a lot of concern out there about the market. I get it. I understand it. I have some of those same concerns. But again, and then the last thing on this, and I'll take a question that we didn't get to last week, and we'll definitely let listeners drive the show. But I understand, again, concerns, and we try to stay out of politics, but we can see, you know, what's happened to the market, and I understand those concerns. But again, I don't think that the people tend to make decisions based on fear or greed. They think there's an opportunity, they should increase stock exposure when maybe they don't need to take on that risk to get a rate of return that they don't need. And conversely, going into safe investments to try to avoid risk of principal, but then maybe hurting your return on investment to the point that your money will shrink in the retirement years and not last as long as you do. You really have to stay focused on your plan and what's appropriate for you and not let short-term things going on dictate too much. Yes, we need to be concerned. And yes, it's influencing the way Wealth Enhancement Group manages these portfolios. There's certain sectors or certain asset classes that maybe we're more bullish or more bearish on now than we were 6 months ago because of some public policy things. So I understand the concern, but hang in there and we'll continue to talk about that. I'm glad you led with that, Peg, because I think that's something probably every listener is concerned about. Hey, Peg, we had a question last week that we didn't get a chance to get to. Someone in Minneapolis wrote to us, thank you for your show. What would you advise to do with a traditional IRA account invested in a certificate of deposit, a CD? There's an annual fee. It's a smaller amount. It's under $20,000. Is it a good time to put this money into a fixed annuity from a life insurance company rather than through a bank? Peg, what do you think?
That's a good question. One of the first things I'm thinking of is, even though it is an IRA, I don't know how old this person is, but do you need to access that money in any period of short time? Because a lot of times people would look at a CD or maybe a money market because they're maybe talking about spending it, or maybe it's your first required minimum distribution that you want to take out. So if you don't need the money for a year or two, maybe you do want to try to get higher interest on that. But I'm not a huge fan of number one, going into a fixed insurance policy even, because most of them, if not all of them, have back-end charges. So if you put your money into a insurance contract and it looks kind of like a CD, meaning they're going to quote you an interest rate, they don't charge you anything when you open that annuity, but yet somewhere between 3, 5, or 7 years, they have what's called back-end charges. So if you would want to pull your money out, they would assess this charge at that time. So once again, be sure that you have some liquidity if you need to get that money out. And I'm not opposed to insurance products per se, but once again, they have this surrender charge, and that's the part that I think people kind of overlook, because they might be, sometimes insurance companies have what I call a lure-in interest rate, where they give you a higher rate for the first year, and then it's trust me for the rest of the years. And so that sometimes gets people excited because they're like, gosh, I can't even get that at the bank. I'm going to go with this insurance company. But I would say, Bruce, what you have to do is read the fine print about that product. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, this the question opens up potentially a much bigger, broader discussion, about annuities in general, because there's a lot of other types of annuities beyond just fixed interest annuities. And I don't think I want to go down that road because the texter didn't actually ask about it. But I will just say that, annuities are a tool that we can use. And in general, as Peg said, one of the disadvantages can be a reduction of investor liquidity. But sometimes they also have some advantages, depending upon the kind of annuity. And I think the advisor's job if it's something that the advisor is considering recommending to their client, the advisor's job is to give them all the information, right? Here are the good things, here are the not so good things, and then the client or the investor can make a fully informed decision as to whether or not they think those good things justify the negative things. And we just give them the information so they can decide. But so in this case, because there's so much about the texture that we don't know, it's impossible for Peg and I to say if the annuity is the right road to go down or not. But certainly it's a tool that we can and do use also at Wealth Enhancement Group when the circumstances are appropriate. Josh, anything coming in terms of calls or texts?
We do have some texts to rattle through. We'll try and get a couple here before the break here. This texter asks, can I open and find a 529 account for my grandkids before they are born?
Oh, what a good question. So, Peg, maybe first for listeners that don't know, let's define what 529 is. And then can we open a 529 before we even have those future grandkids that we're anticipating?
Well, a 529 is for education. And the reason that they're popular is if you put money into them, they can grow tax-free if you follow all the rules. So one of the questions is you've got a person that's not even born yet. What's nice about a 529, the way that they're set up is there's an owner and there's a beneficiary. And you can actually set up the beneficiary as being yourself, or you could even put somebody else in that, because you can actually change that beneficiary, as long as you follow the rules of changing it. So let's say you already have a grandchild, but you really don't want to give that to that particular child. You could list that child, and then you could actually, when the new one is born and has their formal name, you can switch it. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, I think I've talked about this on the show before. I know that, this goes back a long ways, but I started to save and invest on behalf of my kids before they were actually born, but it wasn't a 529. So to the texter's question, yeah, you just set it up in whatever name, and then as Peg said, when that child is born, then you put them on as the beneficiary. But you need a name, you need a social security number, you need a way for them to be identified. But certainly you can open it up in anybody being the beneficiary, knowing that you're going to change it when those grandkids are born. Josh, can we sneak in one more in the first half?
Absolutely. We'll go to this one. Can you meet with a wealth enhancement advisor to discuss a financial plan without investing with your company?
That's a great question. Peg, you want to talk about how you did in your practice?
Sure. Well, we call those introductory meetings, and I call it a two-way interview. And I call it a two-way interview because I appreciate the fact that someone will take their time to explain, what they're looking for, what's their goals, their aspirations. Here's something where they may want to meet with someone, but they maybe not want to engage with them. But you don't really know that until you have this two-way interview. What's important to you? What are your values? What are you trying? Why are you contacting someone? Maybe there's a specific reason. We will always take the time to talk to you, to walk through those things. And then we will also disclose, if indeed you decide to engage us, what would that cost and what are the terms of that? But I feel like in my history, I think it's well worth talking to someone. And we will answer questions in that first interview, if they're simple to answer and we don't have our complete arms around you, we'll still try to make that conversation of value to you and your time. Bruce?
Yeah, that's a great answer. I'm going to want to add probably a couple of things. And I know, Josh, we're getting close to being out of time. So some of this might carry over to the second half of the show. But the first point I want to make is that introductory meeting that Peg mentioned, there is no cost or no obligation. So, Peg, I've had introductory meetings where either the client has decided it's not the right fit, or I've told the client, I don't think we are the right fit for you right now, but here's some things you can take away and work on, and maybe we'll meet again someday. But that first meeting, since there is no cost and there's no obligation, there really isn't much downside. So I always encourage people, what have you got to lose to come and talk to us? And so I'm glad the texter asked that, but no, you don't have to invest with us. And I have clients that haven't invested with us, but then the question will become, and this is what I'll elaborate on in the second half of the show, then what is the cost, or how does Wealth Enhancement Group benefit if you don't invest with us? So, Josh, I know we're due for a break. I'll finish up the answer to that question, but then any and all questions from listeners during the second half of the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bruce and Peg. And then, of course, if you do have a question for these two fine folks, you can join us on the other side of the break. Again, 651-461-9226. Again, it is your money. And if you have any questions or any kind of concerns about your financial situation, please do join the show and be a part of it and chime in and ask your question after the break. You're listening to Your Money. Indeed, it is Your Money here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. If you do have a financial question for today's speakers, you can always call this number 24/7, 1-888-6-ADVICE. You can also email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But for now, call or text our studio line if you have any questions or concerns about your financial situation, your money, if you will, 651-461-9226. Without further ado, here is the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor Bruce Helmer and senior vice president and financial advisor Peg Webb.
That is the voice of producer extraordinaire Josh Wheeler. For the second week in a row, you get to hear him live. Josh, thank you. And listeners, thank you for hanging in there. If you joined us late, it's a Ask Peg and Bruce Anything day. If you're on the phone, hang in there. We will get to your phone call, Al and others. But before we went to break, I had a question about whether or not Wealth Enhancement Group would work with somebody if they chose not to invest with us. And the short answer is yes, but let me elaborate a little bit. So a lot of people might know this, but if you don't, but our primary way at Wealth Enhancement Group of being compensated for our services is a fee for assets under management. That fee might range from maybe 1 to 1.5%, depending upon the circumstances, 1 to 1.5% of your total assets under management. So if you had $100,000 with us, your fee might be somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 a year. But you don't only get the money management, which is value added in and of itself. You also get strategic planning ideas, advice, future value forecasting, tax reduction strategies, pension analysis, Social Security analysis, and so forth. There's a lot of planning that's covered under that fee, not just the fee for assets under management. And when I say that, a lot of people say, well, that sounds reasonable, but if you make your money by getting your hands on my money, how can you be objective? If I've got other investments and I come to Wealth Enhancement Group, aren't you just going to look at it and go, well, that's no good. You should move that to Wealth Enhancement Group because that's how you get paid. And the answer is no. A lot of times it does not make sense to reposition assets to invest with us. We might like the investment that you're in and think it's appropriate for you. Or maybe we don't like it, but there's some detrimental impact if you move it. Maybe there's significant tax consequences if you sell out of it. Maybe there's some sort of a penalty if you're in an annuity or a B-share mutual fund. So we're only going to reposition assets if we think it's in your best interest to do so, and we can give you a compelling case to do it. Now, if you're somebody that wants our services and either doesn't have any investments or it's not appropriate for you to invest with us, then we might charge some sort of a financial planning fee because, again, I always tell people, Peg, I'm a nice guy, but I'm not willing to work for nothing. I have to get paid for my time. But the vast, vast, vast majority of our clients do choose to invest with us, and I think there's several reasons why that's true. Number one, our return on investment compared to fair apples-to-apples benchmarks historically has been very competitive. But number two, you're going to pay somebody to manage money no matter where you go. And then if you want the planning and you have to pay separately for that, your overall cost to get advice and service goes up. If you can get it all for one fee, like you can with us, it behooves you to do that. So the vast majority of our clients do invest with us, but you could be a wealth enhancement client without investing with us. That's not rare. That does happen. Peg, anything you want to add before we go back to the listeners?
Yeah, the only other thing I would add is it's interesting still to this day, a lot of clients or prospective clients have IRAs or some deferred plan. They have maybe 401ks that they roll to us when they retire. And this fee that you talked about, Bruce, you know, we do pull that fee out of IRA plans too. And what I tell my clients and prospective clients is, you're actually getting that tax-free. Because if I pull 1% out of your account, you still haven't paid any tax on that. And so that's actually a positive for people. And I know that many people listening have those deferred assets. So it's almost like a reduction, if you will. And then secondly, I feel too that all the things that you said, Bruce, were spot on. But there's something about having someone you trust and that you can give, that will give you advice. And I know even for myself, there's decisions that I need to make for myself, but yet I bounce off of other people because it's very hard for people to manage their money, manage wealth for the family, be able to look at all the different ideas. And I would say our experiences, we've worked with so many different types of people and lots of people that just that experience that we have of working with others, what's worked and what has not. So those are a couple things I wanted to add, Bruce.
Excellent. Josh, let's go back to the listeners.
All right, we are going to take a call here from Al in Plymouth.
Hi. I'd just like to address the Bruce and Peg for the woman who called in that whether or not to go with wealth enhancement. I can honestly say that I usually thought I could invest as good as anyone else, and I have for many years until my wife persuaded me to contact wealth enhancement. We went with the Michelle Newhouse Group in Arden Hills, and I've been with them for 19 years. I've recently lost my wife, who was my rock and my partner, and Michelle, Kim, Melissa from the Arden Hills office have been like family to me with all the transfer and all the paperwork that was involved with the fact that my wife had died. So I can highly recommend wealth enhancement. Their fees are lower than most, and it would well be worth your time to talk to Wealth Enhancement. Thank you. Good show.
We're so sorry for your loss. That actually kind of brought a tear to my eye. But I'm proud that you said that, and I'm proud of our team in Arden Hills and all those names you mentioned. I'm not surprised that they acted like family and that they were empathetic and compassionate. That's who they are. That's who we think we are as a firm. I appreciate that, Al. Obviously, we didn't ask you to say that. I didn't know Al was going to say that. Peg, did that move you at all or make you proud of us a little bit?
I actually have goosebumps right now. I do. I'm just so proud of everyone that works at Wealth Enhancement Group and the company we built, which said, if you do the right thing, you know, the compensation will come. And that's how you build a great company that we have. So, yeah, I still have those goosebumps.
Yeah, thanks, Al. All right, Josh, other listeners?
This texter writes, good morning. Always enjoy the show. My question is, how does Medicaid affect paying for a nursing home? Suggestions on how to pay for long-term care or how should we save for it?
Okay, so a relatively short text. But Peg, a monstrously potentially long answer with a lot of different roads to go down. So first of all, Peg, I'll kind of tee this up for you while you gather your thoughts. For listeners that don't know, because within the question, they mentioned long-term care, and I assume they maybe mean long-term care insurance. and we can talk a little bit about the difference between senior care or long-term care versus insurance for that care. Then there's Medicare, then there's Medicaid. And a lot of people are confused about the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. Medicaid, or medical assistance, is basically the program that's set up for people that are financially challenged and to be eligible for Medicaid. And it gets a little more complicated than this, but basically you have to have assets of $3,000 or less. So you have to be, you know, pretty much out of money, and then you might be eligible for medical assistance or Medicaid to help pay for these senior living facilities and other long-term care expenses. And that's very different than Medicare. Peg, you want to take it from there? And again, a lot of different roads we can go down. I don't know that we can, we're not doing a full show on this today, but we probably could.
Yeah. One of the things that I always talk about with clients and even my friends is long-term care insurance. I personally have been a fan ever since long-term care insurance has been out there. I purchased my own policy, and one of the reasons I did is because I have some legacy, a grandmother who was in a nursing home for a long time, and they had to sell some land to have her stay in this nursing home, and it was just kind of devastating for the whole family. So I decided I want to have that long-term care insurance so that my wealth that I worked hard for gets to the next generation and that I don't have to forfeit it all, you know, to a nursing home if I become just like my grandmother. So that's my personal story. And I think people who buy long-term care insurance have some type of motivation for doing it. And the big one is I want to leave money to my kids. I don't want the nursing home to take all my money. And then that directs me to Medicare. Yes, Medicare will pay for some of your costs, but not all of your costs. So I've witnessed for decades now the costs of assisted living and in nursing homes. And not everything is paid for unless you're down to your last dollars, where that's where Medicaid comes in. And I don't wish that on anybody, because I think everybody has some kind of pot of money that they would love to get to their loved ones. And they know that if they go on the Medicaid system, that they're going to probably run out of money. And then you run out of being able to direct what you want, right? The government is then telling you what you get versus what you want. Bruce?
Yeah, and with regard to the only thing I'll add, that was really good, Peg. The only thing I'll add is with regard to Medicare, again, we're eligible for that when we hit age 65, but you don't have to take it at 65. I've hit 65, and I'm still using my company insurance rather than Medicare. And there's a lot of different reasons that I won't bore everybody with why that's the right choice for me at this point in time. But remember, you're paying for that benefit your whole life when you're working, just like you fund your FICA, your FICA, to fund your future Social Security benefit. You're paying for your future Medicare benefit all those years while you're working. So these programs, you know, are not, you know, we often have them referred to as entitlement programs. Well, it's not really entitlement. We paid for it. We paid an insurance premium basically all the years that we work, and they should be there for seniors. And at least in the short term, I think they will be there for seniors. But a bigger question, and maybe I shouldn't even raise this issue today, is are these programs sustainable going forward as our society ages and we have more people receiving benefits and less people contributing in the workforce? And that's been a question that's been out there for years. And, you know, it's going to ultimately take some political courage to figure out how we solve these issues. But ultimately, something will need to be done. But again, as people approach retirement, as people approach their old age, your Social Security benefit, your Medicare, and Medicare is broken into four parts. A, B, C, and D. Part B is the one most people think of, and there's a cost for Medicare Part B. But Peg, you talk about this all the time. When people are eligible for Medicare, they throw a party, and it's a celebration because their Medicare Part B cost, they're probably getting much better coverage for lower cost than they had under their regular insurance while they were working. And then Part C and D are optional. Medicare supplement or Medicare enhancement, Part C, to pay for things Medicare does not. And then Part D is prescription drugs. But Peg, don't you think that the vast majority of people, when they're 65 and eligible for Medicare, they're able to get better coverage for less money than they were while they were working, which is really, you know, a huge thing to have happen, a huge milestone at 65.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other thing that we encourage people is, you know, if you have this IRA, you're able to pull out dollars to pay for your Medicare and expenses, you know, along the way too. So we got that question a couple of weeks ago about should I convert it to a Roth and pay all the tax now? And we said, well, you know, you might have this health issue or that where you need to pay for a facility or something, and you can pull out your IRA to pay for that. So I like that question in that we get it a lot. And but I'm still a fan for people to buy long-term care if they certainly have a value of getting some money to their children.
Really good. Josh, another question?
Yeah, a texter asks, if someone has a bank trust, including the checking account, can a family member in the trust write out his checks even though they are not specifically on the checking account?
Oh, wow. Peg, I got to admit, I'm not sure I'm familiar with this concept of a bank. You know, normally when I see bank accounts and somebody, more than one person able to write checks, there's either multiple account holders or maybe an adult child for a parent that's starting to fail a little bit. It's POA or power of attorney. Do you know what the texter's asking about with regard to a bank trust, Peg?
Well, I'm just assuming that anytime I hear the word trust, you've put it in probably a revocable trust, meaning there's all the details about where you want your money to go is actually going to be listed in the bank trust. But 99.9% of the time, we encourage, and the attorneys that we work with encourage, to not put your checking account in a trust. Put something like a payable on death, or if you know who the executor of your will is going to be, that would be a good person to put on there, because they're actually going to then be responsible for divvying up your assets, including the checking account, after you've paid all your bills. Bruce?
Yeah, I don't know what else to add to that. We've got about 5 minutes or so left. Let's get to as many questions as we can.
Do you mind if I jump in here and ask you guys a question and apologize for my snafu this morning?
Susie Jones, were you fooled by daylight savings time?
Peg. I was so diligent last night. Before anything, I did the clock and I made dinner. I mean, I did it way early. Wrong, but I did it way early, so... Enough about that. I apologize.
No, don't apologize. It's remember this. It's one of the things that endears you. But well, you what did Josh say? You set your clock the wrong way?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, yeah, interesting is one word for it, Peg.
We're glad you're here. I was worried about you.
Well,
I'm just glad you're okay.
Well, enough about
What's
that.
Your question?
The question from a texter is, I thought I was done with my taxes, and then a new 1099 showed up. When can I expect statements to stop showing up? That's an interesting tax question.
Man. Susie.
Tough one.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Peg, we get this all the time. Those dumb, late, corrected 1099s. Goof every step for those people that want to try to file early.
Yeah, I actually feel for the tax preparers and the people who file their returns as they want you to as soon as possible. But they also kind of rush these custodians to create these 1099s by the deadline. In a lot of cases, they can't do it, but they still have to send them out and then do these redos. So if it's dramatic, and I would talk to your tax prepare what dramatic might be. And if you do need to file again, then you have to file again. And so my big rant is I believe the IRS should not have us all have to have our taxes done by April 15th. They should take the entire population and divide it into four quarters. And then by alphabet, we each have, you know, this 3 month of the year deadline so that we're not all frantic, including the custodians who are sending the 1099s out. So I feel bad for them. But so check your tax preparer if you need to amend. Bruce?
Yeah, and it's not the end of the world if you do have to file an amended return. Clearly, it's not something you want to do if you can avoid it. But I also don't want to tell people, to wait and file in late March or something if they're ready with everything right. else and they want to go and get it done. I don't want to tell them to wait. But, yeah, this is not uncommon. This happens quite a bit, unfortunately. Susie, I think we can squeeze in at least one more.
All right, let's try this one. I'm currently 66 years old. Will I need to take an RMD from both my IRAs and my 401k when I turn 73? If so, should I consider rolling over my 401k into my Roth IRA now, or when should I do that?
Oh, great question. Peg, can you do it in a minute? Retired minimum distribution, IRA, 401k, Roth conversion. Go.
Yeah, so I'm a fan of consolidating IRAs if you can, getting your 401k into your IRA if it makes sense, because the required minimum distribution is kind of complex, and I don't necessarily, you can actually just take the RMD from one account, but you can't not take from the 401k. So that's why the consolidation of putting your IRAs together is a smoother process, especially if you do it on your own. But even with an advisor, it's a bucket of money that I think you can actually, control it more so at that point in time. Bruce?
Yeah, and one of the things we do at Wealth Enhancement is for our clients, we will proactively reach out and tell them when they need to take a required minimum distribution, how much that number is, and where's the best place to take it from if they have multiple accounts. But, yeah, consolidation, if you can do it, definitely makes sense. And, Susie, my stopwatch says we're about out of time.
That is true. We are about out of time, but we want to remind everyone, if you did not get your question answered, you can email yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, or call 1-888-6-ADVICE. That's 1-888-6-ADVICE. Make it a great week.